Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am very, very grateful you chose to be with me on this 24th day of March 2019, and we're going to look at I Want to Know. I've taken some beautiful questions that people have put to me, little one-liners. They're kind of like, I want to know this and I want to know that. And I'm very happy that I get these emails like this, and I've gathered them together and made a program out of it. And I hope that it serves you well, and I hope that it answers their questions well. That's very, very important. I want to remind you, as I do every broadcast, that these radio programs are here to serve you in the most loving way they possibly can. But you must understand they cost money, and we need your financial support, your tax-deductible gift. We are not funded by anyone but you, the listening audience, and it is only through your gifts, your sponsorship, quarterly or monthly, whatever you choose, that we are able to continue and make these radio programs possible. So, you know, I get a lot of requests, a lot of questions for radio, but people forget that they... I have to pay the bill on this, so won't you become a sponsor? For your kindness, your generosity, you get a slew of wonderful things that I offer in an effort to be of service to you in your spiritual life. Something that most people regard as, well, you know, not very meaningful or not very important, but it's much more important than most people can imagine. Anyway, if you go to the website at aspire.org, down at the bottom, you'll see why support Aspire. And if you click on that button, it will tell you not only where your donations go and your tax deduction on them, which is very important. And believe me, it is. You should have it. And on top of all of that, all of the benefits you get for being a sponsor, especially if you're the kind of person that is, what shall we say, interested in maturing, spiritual development. It is the only way in which we do mature. And hopefully you'll see the value of that and go for it. It's very, very important. First question comes from Karen in Antelope Valley, California. What is the balance of living in this world but not of it, as you talk about? I find this an intriguing thought. Karen. Well, Karen, it's not my thought. It's the thought of every great living master that has ever been on the planet. Jesus talked about it, and Buddha talked about it, Lao Tzu talked about it. It is to live in the world, but not let the world live in you. And this is a very important thing for all of us to understand. It is important to understand that the life is more than meat, and the body is more than raiment, as Jesus even spoke about. He got very, very nitty-gritty in this subject, which he should. And it does help those of us who have ears to hear. But you see, here's the deal. And Karen, I'm going to be very blunt with you and my listening audience here. Nothing I say is going to help you until it has become extremely important to you that you awaken spiritually. Nothing I say is going to be important. Nothing anyone's going to say. Who has the influence to awaken you? Well, it isn't a person. It isn't me. It isn't anyone. It is the presence that lives within you. You have to have some interest in awakening. You have to see it as a possibility. You have to stray away from the conventional mind, the pedestrian mentality, and all of this stuff that goes along with that. If you don't do that, if you're not interested in any of that, what I say doesn't matter. Most people live in the world, strictly live in the world, and they try to adapt everything that is of this world into their life and try to maybe moralize it or spiritualize it with ideas and fantasies and beliefs that they think will make them appear more spiritual. They don't know what's running their life. They don't even know what this life is about. I mean, here you are dumped in this physical body, this carcass of ours. You don't know why you're there. I mean, really, you don't know why you're there. You don't know how to live in it. You know that it needs food and shelter. It needs clothing. It after a while, it needs pampering, and then it festers, gets sick, and dies. And that's the cycle of it. Why that? Why go through all of that? What is that all about? Most people don't know, and 99% of the people I know don't care. So the answer I'm giving to you here might not be the answer that you think is appropriate for what is important to you. So here it is. To live in the world but not let the world live in you. You have to know that which belongs to Caesar and that which belongs to God, as Jesus said. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Meaning, Caesar is taxes, Caesar is the physical body, and all the things that revolve around it, the circumstances and the conditions of keeping your body healthy and all of those other things. And there are conditions and complications to taking care of the body. You know that. I know that. You need money. You need things to take care of your body in the best way possible. There is nothing wrong with that. But you have to understand the line of demarcation, the line where the essence of you and why you stay alive and why you stay healthy and why you work on your life, meaning understanding the nature of your life, the reason you are here, is very, very important. It means nothing if you have everything you want and the spirit of you is gone. You have no soul. Most people don't have a soul. They don't recognize what it is. They don't care. I have students that don't care what it is. They literally don't care. I have friends I talk to, and they'll use, you know, the word soulful, or he has soul, or she has soul, or, you know, they showed no soul and all of that. What's wrong with his soul? You know, people are looking at political leaders and saying they have no soul. That's why they... People don't know what they're talking about. I keep my mouth shut. I never correct them. I never say a word. It's not worth it. People don't get it. People don't want to expand their soul or themselves into the soul. What do you live in? Let me ask you this, Karen. Consider what you live in from within yourself. Do you only live in the body and the circumstances of the body? The complications of your body, the complications of this world? Are you always trying to adjust yourself, your life, to these complications and try to find answers to how to make life easier, more productive, more prosperous, whatever you want to call it? What is your mode of operandi in all of that? That is the real question. How I live within myself. If I'm only geared to my carcass, if I'm only geared to my genetics, if I'm only geared to my DNA, what have I achieved? What have I got here? I got nothing. All I've got is what my body is predisposed to, which is genetics. Now, if you knew my father, Ed and Jean Penn, you would say, my God, Greg's doomed. And I would be doomed. I have been doomed in the past. I had to awaken out of it. I had to get out of that whole kit and caboodle. And until I did, I was suffering grievously because I knew there was more, but I couldn't put my finger on it, how to get there, what to do about it. So the balance You know what your body needs. It needs food and shelter, etc., etc. Don't give it more than what it needs. Put your emphasis on the way of your heart. Live in the totality of a silence that brings you more than just survival. The object of the body is merely to survive, but the essence of your spirit is to bring you to your soul. And when you live from the heartfelt soul of your being, when that is more important to you than anything else in your life, that is when you come to the direct experience of seeing everything as it is, the way it is, for what it is. Now, I'm going to give you a little hint, Karen. It's all about love. Not the love that your body likes, your bones like, you know, your physicality likes. It isn't about any of that. It's about the love that's in your heart. And if you can love in your heart, if you can live in your heart, then much can be done. So, Karen, that's living in the world, but not letting the world live in you. Don't let the fears and the complications of the world get in the way of the simplicity of your heart. If you can do that, if you can listen to your intuition, if you can meditate and just listen without arguing, without trying to make a scene out of it, without trying to make a deal out of it, then you've done something quite unique. I hope that helps. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question, Ryan. He lives in Arizona. I'm getting, you know, some zonies here. What is the meaning of everything we do? You say that everything we do has a meaning. I don't see it, Ryan. Ryan, there isn't one little nuance that my body makes or one little gesture that my body might indulge in or do that doesn't have significance in my life. Every nuance, everything I do is a reaction either to what I've done previous to that, and also then a action that's going to be a reaction in my world. Even as I always say to my students, passing the salt at the dinner table, how you do it, the way you do it, the gesture of it, the meaning of it is profound. But a lot of us don't understand that at all. We don't get it because we're too busy being unconscious and thinking about what we want instead of the nature of what we are. What is the meaning of everything we do? It is the intent. If I do things from the intent of Gregory, the human, I merely do things to comfort him, to get by, to gain, to get some sort of human benefit. That's what I'm doing, and that's what I'm living by. If I do it from a sense of being conscious, then everything I do brings the next event, and the next event, and the next event. Everything starts to build. Everything starts to come to a crescendo in my life. Even passing the salt in how I do it, everything I do matters and brings the next event and the next event and the quality of the next event and how it's going to happen. It's all about karma. There is the karma of your lifetime and then the karma you and I build day to day, moment to moment. And that is the one that changes everything. So you have to ask yourself, how far will I go with my life? Am I going to be conscious of everything I do? Or am I going to live unconsciously in everything I do and just merely get through this day haphazardly living my life as though the little nuances of my daily living just don't matter. This is really the issue of my lifetime. So when you are doing anything, it really doesn't matter what you're doing. You have to stop and ask yourself, what is my motivation? Am I conscious in what I'm doing? Am I just getting through haphazardly, just trying to get things done so I can go do what I want to do? What is it that is authentically happening for me in anything I do? This is extremely important. I can't emphasize this enough for you or any of us. We've all lived our lives in kind of a haphazard way. We all have, one way or another. We do some really crazy stuff that we shouldn't be doing, like eating unconsciously, thinking about our conversations at the dinner table rather than being grateful for the food and understanding where the food came from and what it means to eat it. There are things about being with people. If you're sitting there and talking to people and judging them, just judging them, thinking, well, you know, this person, whatever is the judgment, and you're talking to them through your judgments, which most people do, then you've set a pattern in your mind. You've set your life, your consciousness is gone, and now what you're doing is just setting into motion all of this other stuff that it's going to become a pattern of in the way in which you talk to people. Now, you can do this over and over and over again, which most people have, and they make it very, very difficult on themselves to spiritually awaken. Now, when you sit in meditation, all these thoughts are coming up, all these little intrepidations of the ego start pouring in. And pretty soon your meditation is nothing but a fight. You're fighting to meditate. You're fighting to be conscious because you've built so many habits, so many layers of genetic disposition in you that come in and fire off those synapses and create chemicals in your body that formulate reactions in your brain, in your body, and impulses and oh, golly, all of it, instinctual things that you go through and then you miss. My students, every summer, I have them bring a bowl with them. And the object of their meditation, of their life, is to surround their whole life around that bowl and find the emptiness in the bowl. They look and they look and they look. But very few of them, if any, ever find the emptiness in the bowl because they're thinking emptiness is a thing, an object, something their brain can look at, their eyes can see, but it's not. It has nothing to do with any of that. Emptiness is a state of being. It is not something you see with your physical eyes. And along with the emptiness, you have to find silence. Either one that you find is a very important find in your life. But very few of them do this. Why? Because they're preoccupied with their thoughts all day. Their whole life. They don't see that passing the salt is significant at the dinner table. They just don't see it. Well, you just pass it. No, you don't. No, you have to be conscious. You have to be very conscious of what you're doing. And even saying that, what the hell does Greg mean by that? There are some things I can present to you, but there are many things I can't explain to you. You have to do them yourself. You have to find out for yourself. It's like riding a bicycle. Ryan, how do you explain to a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, what balance is, how to balance on two wheels? How do you do that? You just have to get on the bike and feel it. And that's what I'm saying to you. It's a very important thing to find the meaning of everything we do. It's a balance, just like Karen's question of living in the world but not living of it. These are very important questions, and I hope that you practice enough to find their answer. You're going to have to go beyond the human mind and the human genetic syndrome of what's in it for me to really understand any of it. But there you are. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question, and this is from Les. He does not tell me where he lives. Why do you say giving and forgiving are so important? Les. Les, our lives, whether we know it or not, are tragedies, utter tragedies. We've lived them in the soullessness of our ego, our vanity, our pride. We have made our life less than beautiful. We didn't give when we could have, and we didn't forgive when we should have. And I'm just saying those things, not out of morality, but out of opportunity. Everything you give is a preamble to your forgiving. The person who is most generous is the one who can forgive. And we have a lot of anger and hostility towards people who we think have done us wrong. We have no sense of understanding of why they might have. And whatever it is that we thought was wrong, well, we can't even question that. I mean, that's just something that is beyond our capacity to understand. The effort of spirituality is to move into emptiness, to liberate yourself from everything, from thought, ideas, ideals, beliefs, everything, and to allow love to live you. Yes, to allow love, not hate, not vengeance, not pride, not vanity, not ego, to allow love to live you, which is the overseer, which is the soul of all of that. But we're not much interested in any of that because we're so busy trying to get what we want in our life that we think is rightful to us, righteous to us. The most dangerous condition that happens to a person, and I wrote a commentary about this at the end of this month in March on self-righteousness and self-preservation coming together. When that happens, when that forms, a great deal of hatred begins to build in us. It's the catalyst for hate and fear in us. There's no liberation in hate and fear. There's no liberation in not being generous. You have to let go of everything. Spiritual work, inner work, coming to the place of awakening, of being under the auspice of the soul, means that I am no longer infringed by the ideas of right and wrong, good and bad, deserving or undeserving. I am living in no fantasy about myself or other people any longer. That takes real courage. And few people have that courage because they are so busy wanting what they think will make them happy and give them comfort and avenge themselves. It's real ugly. We've all had people do this to us in our life. I've had my closest friends at one time do it, my own colleagues do it. It's real ugly. There is nothing uglier than hatred and vengeance. I hope that helps you, Les. Have a beautiful day. I want to thank all of you for listening. We'll be back on the air next week. Please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.